listening to the Early Childhood Leadership Academy podcast at Erickson Institute. Thank you for joining us as we continue the diversity conversation with Bessie Alcantara and Jim Norman.
Hi, Jim. As a society and organizationally, we have a tendency to place the responsibility of advocating for an inclusive environment on the marginalized. For example, at work the other day, I had a situation where I had three males in a meeting and two other women. And one of the men was talking, and one of the women was trying to get a word in. None of the men noticed that she was trying to talk. So it became my responsibility to call it out and say, hey, she's trying to talk. Even after I called them on it, they went ahead and did it again a couple of minutes later. How do you shift the conversation so that those who have the power are able to advocate on our behalf?
And that still requires some level of work, because in the example you gave, you have to create a level of awareness. So here were these gentlemen, they weren't even aware of what they were doing. So you go even, the next step is, if they're not aware of what they're doing, they haven't even thought about it as to, like, why am I doing it? I didn't know I was doing it. And now, like, why am I doing it is a whole nother thing. So there's going to be a part, a role that we all play in helping one another become aware, sensitive, and understand. Because they have unfortunately not been in our situation, how difficult it is to see from the other's perspective. And we have to open them up to us to see our perspective. My experience has been, for those who are aware and understand, they will tell you, well, it was because I was in the military with someone who was different than me, and here's what I learned about that individual, and here's how I developed appreciation. And we had some really frank and, you know, candid conversations. And I could ask some stupid questions about race, like, why do you all talk like that? And why does this change? And he didn't get offended, and he answered, you know, my questions. And I really developed appreciation. Something happened in the media, and I saw how it impacted his family. I saw what happened with Trayvon Martin, and then I thought about, he has a son that age. Let me give him a call right now. So the helping to allow awareness to happen, sensitivity, based on trust and relationship. So we're always going to be obligated for trust and relationship, especially in an environment that's been so rooted in stereotypes and demonizing the other and distancing the other. So this notion of reaching out is always a human effort and emotion for someone who's trying to engage. And I take it as fortunate and blessed that I have that ability and, in fact, that obligation to reach out and engage.
So I have a couple of questions. I'm going to start with one of the things you talked about is creating an environment with trust, right? And I think when you're part of a marginalized group, people may say things that are really uncomfortable and you want to be offended by, or you want to respond to. So what advice would you give someone to create those conversations in a safe way for them?
I'll do two things. One is I'll reference, for those who are interested in that topic, because it's a very important topic, in the book Cracking the Corporate Code by Dr. Price Cobb, which is a number of scenarios of people of color being put in very challenging situations. And they had to figure out how to respond, right? And when is the appropriate time to do that? So if someone were to say something that made you kind of very uncomfortable, I'll give you an example. I was working in a job, human resources grew out manager. Essentially, I was the HR manager for the turkeys. I was out visiting with one of the grow out operations. He was a grow out supervisor. Translation, he made sure the turkeys got delivered to the farm as baby poults and made sure they survived till they were delivered to the manufacturing facility. He was in Ellsworth, Iowa. Let me give an example of Ellsworth, Iowa. Every white male over the age of 40 had been married at least once in Ellsworth, Iowa. So after we had walked through the turkey farms, a city kid, African-American from Chicago, had made the test of walking through multiple turkey farms a day, so much so that he needed to come home and change. I couldn't change. He sat down across from the table and he said to me, where did you come from? And I said, what do you mean? Well, you know, I've been working with the company a long time. I haven't seen anyone like you. And so I shared my background. Born, raised Chicago, West Side, went to school here. Kind of start sharing some of those secondary dimensions that didn't fit with what he was asking me about my race. I could have got offended. I could have been insulted. I had access to his manager. I worked with the VP of Human Resources. So I was, in his mind, I was a powerful person who could have reacted very differently. But I took that moment to say he's asking this because he wants to understand. Maybe he wants to understand why the organization hasn't done more. Maybe he wants to understand why in his community, which had no diversity population, a town of 400, you know, he hadn't had much exposure to African Americans. So I thought it was an opportunity for awareness, for understanding, and so that he would feel comfortable having the conversation in the future with another African American, another Latino, and perhaps having the conversation with another white male that he's seen capable, African Americans. He's seen friendly, honest, credible African Americans in his life to take away the stereotypes which might have started his questions, but I didn't assume that was it.
So my other question is, you talked a little bit about creating awareness, and that's some of the work that we have to do. One of the points of awareness is this concept of privilege. How do you approach the conversation around privilege and explain that to somebody who holds privilege? And I'm not just race, but able-bodied, religion, whatever the case may be.
There are a couple of ways that people have tried to sensitize others to privilege. One is to take away the privilege for a day, for even an hour, even for 2 minutes. It could be sight. It could be your physical ability. It could be just, okay, so here are the steps I have to go through when I'm shopping as an African-American male. Here's the things I have to walk through. And to begin to understand what privilege is, for others to understand what privilege is. Because the challenge is, with those who've had privilege, they have no sense of the other. They have absolutely no sense of the other. So that when I got stopped as a teenager and the police would say, who are you? Where are you coming from? My only thing that I'd been doing was driving a nicer car while being African American in the wrong side of Chicago. But once you'd say a couple of things, the policeman would know. As a comedian said, look, one told me in Texas, and then I was much older, he stopped me. He said, I stop a lot of good guys to catch a few bad guys. So here were the criteria he stopped me on in an intentional stop. And it's intentional because I said, at this part of the road, in an area I had lived in many years ago in Texas, to pass, you need to move to the right lane. That's unusual. So this small section, about 1 mile, to pass, the sign tells you, if you're passing through, move to your right. Nowhere else will you see that. And guess who was getting pulled over? People with out-of-state plates on 75, and many people of color. So here I am, I get pulled over in a town I lived in, and the officer in a thick Texas accent says, I stop a lot of good guys to catch a few bad guys. As I was standing at the back of my car, and he asked, can I go through your minivan? And he went up to talk to my wife to see what was going on. So here's the context of all that situation. 75, that stretch of road, is a drug corridor. Out-of-state plates. Certainly profiled because I was a person of color. I complied, let him know that I lived in the town, gave him my previous address, and then he made the confession and statement. we turned around, we stopped, had something to eat, and we turned around. I think we went to go back and look at our old home. And guess who I see, same officer, guess who he had stopped? Another African-American in about the same spot with out-of-state plates. He does this all day. There's something that we have to live with. That's not fair. That is what it is. We've got to navigate through that because we've got bigger things that we're after. But there will always be some burden and some challenge that we have to deal with. But as we can, as I sat with the grow-out supervisor, as much as we can, we try to educate. And we try to make an experience that gives them something that says a bit of dissonance to the stereotypes that they experience every day.
Thank you for sharing that real life example. It's unfortunate that you had to go through that, but what's great about the conversation today is that you've been able to share some actual tangible techniques and how we can work through some of these issues. Again, thank you for talking to me today, Jim. It's been amazing.
And it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Jim and Bessie. This concludes this series. Thanks for listening to the Early Childhood Leadership Academy podcast. Stay up to date with the latest in early childhood developments with future podcasts. For more information about the Early Childhood Leadership Academy, please visit www.erickson.edu. That's www.erickson.edu. See you next time.